Okay.
So, Birshus Imim Arasi, I want to welcome everybody who is here for the annual Yahrzeit Shir for my father, Rav Tzvi Ben Ephraim HaKohen, Harry Risa, Zichrono Levracha. And the topic that I chose for this year's Shir is Are Women Obligated in Havdalah? I chose this topic for a few reasons. The first, because it's interesting. The second, because my father used to do a very impressive job every single Motzei Shabbos. When it came time for Havdalah, he had the ritual down pat, and it was something that was very meaningful and special in our family. Even my younger children, who were only 2 or 3 years old when my father got ill, remember when they are trying to conjure up memories of my father, of their Saba, Zichrono Levracha. So one thing that stands out is they remember how he used to make Havdalah so melodically and so beautifully and so seriously and intensely. It was just a very special moment of transition of Havdil Ben Kodesh took place at the conclusion of every Shabbos. And then he would always say a little sing-song afterwards, good book, Shavua Tov, and you felt more relaxed getting ready for the difficult week ahead. And thirdly, because I had a Shaila that was presented to me this past year, I get questions sometimes from people all over the country, and sometimes I get questions from rabbis on college campuses. So one of the rabbis, who's a Hillel rabbi in a college campus, asked me specifically with respect to Havdalah. He wanted to make it as participatory an experience and as meaningful an experience for all of the students on campus, and he had many young men and young women, get the young women involved. He said that when they make, since there's no question that women are obligated in Kiddush the same as men, so they have their Kiddush ceremony on Friday night. When they all meet in the Hillel, is that everybody picks up a separate cup of Kiddush wine, and they all recite Kiddush together. So everybody feels empowered, and everybody feels important that all the men and the women on campus, they all recite Kiddush together. So he wanted to do the same thing with respect to Havdalah. He wanted to conclude that Havdalah is just as much an obligation for women as it is for men. And even though the custom has been that it's always men who make Havdalah, and we're going to talk about the women, so he wanted to know whether I would approve. He wanted the approval of some higher-ranking rabbi, I suppose, to endorse this practice so he could get me into trouble and introduce this notion that everybody would have a cup together. They would all say Havdalah together, and then they would approach the candles and pass out the besamim. They figure out a way that everybody could do it together. So I had to answer that question. And not to ruin the punchline, but just in case somebody's not able to stay until the end of this year, I told him that I couldn't approve of the practice because it's not Minhag Yisrael. The Minhag Yisrael is that when it's possible for men to make Havdalah, it's the men who make the Havdalah as opposed to the women. But I felt that it was worthwhile to explain exactly why and to explore the notion of this mitzvah of Havdalah and the respective obligation of both men and women in the fulfillment of the mitzvah. So the first question is, what is the nature of the mitzvah of Havdalah separating between Shabbos and the rest of the week? We know that women in general are exempt from mitzvot esei shezman grama, from time-bound positive commandments. Havdalah is something which is only performed once a week. It's performed at the end of Shabbos. We also have Havdalah at the end of Yontif. Let's focus on the Havdalah at the end of Shabbos. So it's governed by time. It is only made at specific moments in time. So therefore, it would seem that women should be exempt for that reason. On the other hand, we know that the performance of Kiddush, which is the special ceremony that ushers in the Shabbos, is something that is obligatory, equally obligatory, upon women as much as it is upon men. Why is that? Because we derive the mitzvah of Kiddush from the pasuk in the Torah. It's in the Ten Commandments, the Aseres HaDibros, Zochos Yom HaShabbos L'Kodesho. You're supposed to remember, and this is an active remembrance, you're supposed to mention the Shabbos day when Shabbos comes in. The idea of Zachreyu Al Hayayin, as the Gemara in Pesachim says, you're supposed to remember it by having wine, having a Kiddush cup, and the other description of Zachreyu, as the Rambam puts it, is that it's a mitzvah's essay, it's a positive commandment to lemor devarim, to say words of holiness and sanctity regarding the Shabbos when the Shabbos enters. And the Gemara in Brachos and Daf Chof Amud Beis says women are obligated in Kiddush. Why are they obligated? Isn't it a mitzvah zesei shezman grama, a time-bound positive commandment? So the Gemara explains that we have a complementary pasuk, a complementary verse in the Torah, when the Torah describes the Luchos Shnios, the second set of commandments, and the Torah says, Shamor es Yom HaShabbos L'Kodesho, that it says that you should guard the Shabbos day. And we're told that really Zachar and Shamor, B'dibor Echa Nemru, they were both said together. It's not like one was said one time, one another time. No, Zachar and Shamor, B'dibor Echa Nemru, we sing that in L'chad Dodi, Shamor v'Zachar, B'dibor Echa, right? That Shamor and Zachar was said together at one time, and therefore called Eitanu B'Shmira, Eitanu B'Zechira, that anybody who's commanded regarding the word Shamor, guarding the Shabbos day, is also commanded regarding the mitzvahs that are included in Zachor, in remembering or mentioning the Shabbos day. What is included in Shamor, in guarding the Shabbos day? So that's all the negative commandments of Shabbos, refraining from the 39 prohibited categories of labor, the Lamites Malachos, that's included in Shamor. The Mishnah in Kiddushin and Daf Chavtes tells us that women are obligated in all of the negative commandments of the Torah. So we know that women are obligated when it comes to Shamor. So therefore, just as the women are obligated when it comes to Shamor, women are also obligated when it comes to Zachor. So therefore, women are obligated in Kiddush. So the question is, where then does Havdalah fit in on this spectrum? Do we say that Havdalah is also derived from Zachor, that it's also one of the mitzvahs of Shabbos, of remembering the Shabbos day, and therefore women would also be obligated in Havdalah? Or do we say that Havdalah is somehow something separate? So if you look at the Rambam in Perek Chaf Tes of Hilchos Shabbos seems to put Kiddush and Havdalah together. The Rambam says, Mitzvahs esei min haTorah, the Kaddish is Yom HaShabbos b'dvarim. It's a positive commandment to sanctify the Shabbos day with words. Shenema Zachos Yom HaShabbos l'kodesho, Kloma Zachreyo Zechira Shevach v'kiddush. You're supposed to remember the Shabbos day through words of praise and sanctification. And then the Rambam adds, Mitzorach Zachreyo b'knisaso v'yitziyaso. You're supposed to remember it when it comes in and when it goes out. The Knisaso, in case there's any misunderstanding regarding what he means, the Rambam spells out exactly. The Knisaso, B'Kiddush Hayom, Knisaso, when it comes in, means the mitzvah of Kiddush. V'Yitziyaso, when Shabbos goes out, B'Havdalah, in the mitzvah of Havdalah. So the Rambam derives both Kiddush and Havdalah from Zachos Yom HaShabbos L'Kodesho. Therefore, the Magen Mishnah comments on the spot that it appears crystal clear that according to the Rambam, the obligation of Havdalah is equally incumbent upon women as much as it is incumbent upon men. That it is a mitzvah on a deraisa level, number one, that Havdalah is a mitzvah deraisa. Number two, it's derived from the pasuk Zachos Yom HaShabbos L'Kodesho. Number three, once it's derived from the pasuk of Zachos Yom HaShabbos L'Kodesho, that means that it would be binding upon women as well. This notion of Havdalah being a mitzvah deraisa, of being a Torah obligation, is also found in the Sefer HaChinuch. It's also found in Rabbeinu Yonah. It's also found in the words of the commentary that normally appears where the commentary of Rashi appears in Maseches Nazir. Only we're pretty sure it's not Rashi, but the commentary, what we call the Mefarish, on Dab Dalet Amun Aleph in Maseches Nazir, also quotes this same derivation. It claims that it's found in a Gemara. It's not actually found in a Gemara, but apparently at least some had this version of a Gemara in Psachim that says that the mitzvah of Zachor or Zachareo includes not only Kiddush, but also includes Havdalah, Zachareo, Beknisaso, Uvi Yitziyaso, remember Shabbos when it comes in, and when it goes out. So, others say that it is a mitzvah de'araisa. They derive it perhaps a little bit differently. There's a Migdol Oz on the Rambam. Doesn't usually get quoted, the Migdol Oz. The commentators that surround the Rambam are Kesef Mishnah, Magin Mishnah, Lechem Mishnah. They get quoted a lot more than the Migdol Oz, but we'll give the Migdol Oz a little bit publicity as well. So the Migdol Oz says that really these Zachar v'Shamar are the two different sides of the coin when it comes to Kiddush and Havdalah. Zachar stands for sanctifying Shabbos when it comes in, and Shamar, the idea of safeguarding, means that you safeguard the Shabbos by making sure that Shlo Yinag b'minag chol ad shi'avdilenu. Guard the Shabbos that you should not act in accordance with weekday activities until you perform Havdalah, until you perform some act of separation between Shabbos and the rest of the week. That's how you're going to guard the Shabbos. You're going to guard the sanctity of the Shabbos first through Havdalah before you plunge into your regular weekday activities. It says you can actually derive it from Shamar. But whether I'm deriving from Zachor, whether I'm deriving from Shamar, it would seem that it would also devolve upon women as well. Magi Mishnah says, I have another scriptural source for Havdalah. If you want to look for a different psukim in the Torah, maybe it's not necessarily Zachor and it's not necessarily Shamar. Maybe it's just the pasuk that appears in Parsha Shmini, Lahavdil Ben HaKodesh Uven HaChol. That it says in Parsha Shmini, you're supposed to, in general, separate between those things that are sacred and those things which are mundane. The Gemara Shavuos Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis says that we, in fact, derive from here that if you make Havdalah on wine on Motzei Shabbos, so then you get a tremendous reward. What's the reward? You have male children. What's better than that? You have male children, and how do we see that's the reward? Because the pasuk says in Parsha Shmini, l'havdil ben hakodesh l'bein hachol, and then if you continue on towards the end of the parsha, it says l'havdil ben hatameh uvein hatahor, and then if you continue in this vein, you look at the beginning of the next parsha, Parsha Tazria, says isha ki sazria v'yalda zachar. So that a woman conceives and she gives birth to a baby boy. So he says, the Gemara says, from the juxtaposition, we see that if you are good at being l'havdil ben hakodesh uvein hachol and being l'havdil ben hatameh uvein hatahor, you're good at making Havdalah, separating properly, then you make Havdalah on wine on Motzei Shabbos, so then you will be zocha, you'll merit to have boys. So he says, this also could be utilized as a possible scriptural source. Now, the Magen Mishnah mentions not everybody agrees with the Rambam that it is a mitzvah de'araisa. He quotes Rishonim. You can find this in the Me'iri, Maseches Brachos, Daf Chof Amud Beis. You'll find this in the Ritva, in Psachim, Daf Nun Dalet Amud Aleph. These Rishonim say there's a possibility that maybe the mitzvah of Havdalah is only midrabbanan. It's only rabbinic. We're making Kiddush, for sure. Having a Kiddush is de'araisa. Making it on wine could be de'rabbanan. But the fact that there should be Kiddush, so that certainly is a mitzvah de'araisa. But Havdalah is only de'rabbanan. We have these various scriptural sources that seem to back it up. So you say, those are asmachtos. Those are asmachtos. Those are various supportive sources for the rabbinic law. But really, fundamentally, it's only a rabbinic law. But says the Magen Mishnah, doesn't matter so much in terms of our inquiry. The Magen Mishnah says, and this is really reflected in the words of both the Me'iri and the Ritva, that even if you say that Havdalah is only a mitzvah derabbanan, it's only rabbinic, since it would be modeled, presumably, after the idea of Kiddush and after the idea of Zocharis Yom HaShabbos L'Kodesh, of sanctifying the Shabbos day, which is obligatory upon women, so therefore the rabbinic law would be modeled in the same fashion that it was enacted, so that it would also be obligatory not only upon men, but also upon women. That it would be ke'en de'araisa tiknum, that the rabbis, the chachamim, would have enacted it in the same manner as Torah laws. So it would seem, based on this analysis, that no matter how you slice it, women would be obligated in Havdalah. Now, there is another possibility to say that maybe the mitzvah of Havdalah could be de'araisa. It could be a Torah mitzvah, and yet not necessarily incumbent upon women, because if it's not derived from Zachor, if you learn, like the Magen Mishnah happened to mention, that there is this other pasuk, Lahavdil Bein HaKodesh Bein HaChol, so you could say, well, that pasuk is not Zachor, and therefore, if Havdalah is a time-bound positive commandment, and it's not explicitly derived from the verse of Zachor, which is compared to Shamor, so then maybe it would only be obligatory upon men, but not upon women. So I saw Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon Shlita makes that argument, that he says that you could say we're going to derive the law from that separate pasuk, in which case there's no hekesh, there's no juxtaposition, so to speak, between Zachor and Shamor, and women would not necessarily be obligated. But I didn't really see anybody else explicitly make that argument. It seems that if you are deriving from Lahavdil Bein HaKodesh Levein HaChol, then you are assuming that it's somehow tied in. If you're deriving that on a Torah level, that it's tied in to the idea of a Zachor as well. This might relate, I'll just say this as a quick tangent, because this would be a lengthier discussion. It might relate to a separate machlokis that is quoted by the Ran in Masechta Shabbos, a machlokis between the Ran and Rabbeinu Tam, as to whenever you have any positive commandment on Shabbos, regardless of the pasuk that it's derived from, do I say that the juxtaposition between Zachor and Shamor teaches me automatically that any Torah positive commandment on Shabbos is automatically binding upon women, that is what Zachor teaches me? In other words, that the word Zachor doesn't only teach me that women are obligated in Kiddush, or things that are very much like Kiddush, but it teaches me that any time I have a positive commandment on Shabbos, it's going to be obligatory upon women. I remember when I was a student at Shalavim, and I had to give a chabura, I chose a very interesting topic at the time. As a Talmud, I decided I'm going to speak about, can you walk a dog on Shabbos? And it was a topic, you know, that involved all issues about touching pets on Shabbos, and carrying things where there isn't an Erev for carrying a leash and things of that variety. And it also raises the issue of, can you allow your animal to carry things on Shabbos, which is a violation of the positive commandment of Leman Yanuach, that you have to allow Leman Yanuach Shochav HaMarecha B'Nafesh B'Namaskav HaGir, that you have to allow your animals to rest on Shabbos. And when I was preparing the chabur and I was speaking to various people, they said, oh, there's a Talmid Chacham who comes to the yeshiva once a week. He's a really tremendous crackerjack Talmid Chacham. He knows everything. You should speak to him. Maybe he'll have a good source. His name is Rav Zalman Nechem Yegober. So I didn't know that was so much, and now I have a much greater appreciation. I went over to this person who is described as the son-in-law of Shlomo Zalman Orbach. So I went over to Rav Zalman Nechemya, and I asked him if he had anything to contribute to this discussion. So he pointed me to a Rabbi Akiva Eger saying, so this issue of whether you have to take steps to make sure that your animal doesn't carry on Shabbos, so there might be a distinction between men and women in this regard. It could be that this mitzvah is only obligatory upon men, but not women. He says that's a question that's raised by Rabbi Akiva Eger in his commentary to the Mishnayos. And I looked it up, and sure enough, what do you know? This is what Rabbi Akiva Eger actually said. So Rabbi Akiva Eger says it depends upon this point. Do you hold like the Ran, who's of the opinion that whenever there is a positive commandment on Shabbos, it's automatically included in Zachor, so that it would be incumbent upon women as well? Or do you say, no, that's only a special halakha when it comes to Kiddush, that's the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam? Rabbeinu Tam says when it comes to other positive laws of Shabbos, it's not automatically included within Zohar. Their specific discussion had to do with the mitzvah of having Lechem Mishnah, two loaves at each meal, and Shalosh Sudos, and having three meals on the Shabbos day. That was the context of the discussion. The Ran held that it's obligatory upon women based on Zohar, Es Yom HaShabbos L'Kodesho, and Rabbeinu Tam held, no, it's only based upon Af Hein Hayu B'Oso Anes, that these things are Zecher L'Man, that these things are to commemorate the miracle of the man that fell in double portion on a Friday, and we were told that you should use those double portions and have three meals on a Shabbos. And Rabbeinu Tam says, since that was miraculous, women were also included in beneficiaries of the miracle. Afhein hayu b'yoso anes, that's the reason they're obligated, but not because of Zohar. So that's a separate question. So you might therefore argue that even if you're deriving a Torah obligation from the verse of Lahavdil bein HaKodesh bein HaChol, that it could be that if you hold like the opinion of the Ran and this other possibility raised by Rabbi Akiva Eger, that it would automatically be included within Zohar anyway, and therefore be obligatory upon women. But as I said, that's a digression. So now let me get to the other possibility. Is there a possible way of learning that women are not obligated in Havdalah at all? So the Beis Yosef quotes an authority. This is Rav Aaron HaKohen Miluniel. He was a rabbinic figure who lived he was sandwiched between the Rosh and the Tor, one of the later Rishonim. He wrote a work called Orchos Chaim. In the work of Orchos Chaim, he quotes a number of earlier commentators. And the Orchos Chaim says that really Havdalah is a rabbinic law. It says it's a rabbinic law. And he writes, he quotes the Rash, I think the Rash Mishantz, the Ein Anashim Mavdilos Le'atzman. Women should not make the Havdalah themselves. The Ein Havdalah Tzluya B'Shmira Shabbos. He says Havdalah has nothing to do with the mitzvahs of Shabbos, because when do you perform Havdalah? When Shabbos is over. So therefore, he says it's not included in the various observances of Shabbos. He goes further and he says, Ela Rabbanas Mechua Akra. He clearly understands that Havdalah is only rabbinic. So he says, so when the rabbis enacted this rabbinic law of Havdalah, so they enacted it like any time-bound positive commandment, in the fashion of a time-bound positive commandment, and you cannot tie it in to Zohar, to the idea of Zohar is Yom HaShabbos L'Kodesho. It's not modeled after that. Maybe it's modeled after L'Havdil bein HaKodesh bein HaChol, but it's a rabbinic law entirely, and it has nothing to do with Shabbos. So regardless of how you would hold with respect to the Ran Rabbeinu Tam debate, it has nothing to do with any of the mitzvahs of Shabbos. It's not like Shvisas Behemto of having your animal rest on Shabbos. This is a mitzvah that relates to after Shabbos. It's a rabbinic mitzvah that relates to after Shabbos. So according to him, women are not obligated in Havdalah at all. Since they're not obligated in Havdalah at all, therefore he says that women should not make Havdalah themselves. Now there's a question, how do you read those words? I just said it in English. He didn't write it in English. He wrote, Eina no atzman. Two different ways you can read those four Hebrew words, Ein Anashim Mavdilos La'atzman. You can read it to say women should not make Havdalah themselves, or you can read it to say women don't have to make Havdalah themselves. There's a man around to make Havdalah, wonderful, they can listen. Or if they want to make Havdalah themselves, maybe we're not going to stop them, but they don't need to make Havdalah themselves. So that's a question, whether he's saying simply they don't have to, or whether he's saying that they are not allowed to. And this is an important issue as we get to the actual halacha lemaise. So just to review where we are up until now. So the generally accepted formulation is that this question depends to a certain degree on whether Havdalah is a mitzvah from the Torah or whether it is a rabbinic obligation. You find this formulation in the Bach. You find this formulation among contemporary authorities. This is the way that the issue is laid out on the table by the Shmira Shabbos Kehilchasa, by the Nishma Shabbos, by most of the classical poskim halakhic authorities. They say, like the Magen Mishnah indicates, that if the mitzvah of Havdalah is the Araisa, if it is a Torah obligation, so then for sure it is binding upon women as much as men, because it would fundamentally be learned from the Pasuk of Zacharias Yom HaShabbos L'Kodesho, just like Kiddush, or will somehow be folded into that Pasuk of Zacharias Yom HaShabbos L'Kodesho. And if the obligation of Havdalah is Midrabanan, if it's only rabbinic in nature, so then there are two possibilities. According to one possibility, the approach of the Ritva and of the Meiri, it would still be obligatory on a rabbinic level upon women, because it would be modeled after the Torah law of Kiddush. And just like Kiddush is obligatory upon women, so too Havdalah would be obligatory upon women. And then there is the opinion of the Orchos Chaim, which appears to be just one lone opinion, who says that no, if the mitzvah of Havdalah is only rabbinic, so then it's only obligatory upon men, but not upon women, because we would treat it essentially like a time-bound commandment on a rabbinic level that the rabbis would have said is only incumbent upon men, but not upon women. It has nothing to do with Shabbos, because it's only performed after Shabbos is over. Now, if you take a look in the Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Reish Tzadi Vav, you get to see how we paskin. What is the bottom line halacha? So the bottom line halacha is codified, Siman Reish Tzadi Vav, Sif Ches. Says the Mechaber, Shulchan Aruch, he says, Nashim Chayavos BeHavdalah. Women are obligated in Havdalah. Why are they obligated in Havdalah? Kishem Shechayavos BeKiddush. Just like they're obligated in Kiddush. Women are obligated to make Kiddush. No man around, they have an absolute obligation to make Kiddush. And so too, on the same level, they are obligated in Havdalah, appears to be on a deraisa level according to Torah law. But adds the Mechaber, this is not his binding decision, but he throws it in for good measure. He says, oh, and by the way, v'yesh mi shecholek. You should know, there's somebody who argues. I got to mention it, I got to point it out. Intellectual honesty, comprehensiveness. I'm letting you know, yesh mi shecholek, there is somebody who disagrees. That's the Orchos Chaim that we quoted earlier. Then the Ramah chips in his 2 cents. And of course, we care deeply about that, because we're Ashkenazim. Most of us, I think, are Ashkenazim. There are Sfarim, it's fine. You can still follow the Shir, relevant to both constituencies. But says the Ramah says, Al-Kain lo yabdilu le'atzman. Therefore, they should not make Havdalah themselves. Rak yishmu Havdalah min ha'anashim. So the Ramah seems to say it actually is prohibited, that women actually should not make Havdalah themselves. They should only hear Havdalah from men. This is the normative Ashkenazic practice. This is the halacha psuka, the halacha as paskined by the Ramah. So how much did the Ramah mean this? Let's say there's a woman who's stuck. She can't hear Havdalah from her husband, or her husband doesn't want to make Havdalah for her. Well, let's not go that far. That might be a shalom bias issue. But let's say that the husband already heard Havdalah and Shul, and he had in mind to be Yotzei Havdalah ready, to fulfill Havdalah and Shul. So it's not clear if the wife is not really obligated in Havdalah. We can't say Yotze Motze. We can't say that if he already satisfied his obligation, that he could then exempt his wife. So what should she do under those circumstances? Do we say that she shouldn't make Havdalah at all? Or do we say that, no, fundamentally, the Ramah agrees that she's probably obligated, but in deference to the view that says that she's not obligated, so therefore it's better that she should hear it from her husband. So Rabbi Akiva Eger in Siman Tuf Pei Tes says that if you look at the totality of the rulings of the Ramah, you'll see that the Ramah fundamentally is of the opinion that Havdalah is a Torah obligation. Once it's a Torah obligation, as we mentioned, then the general assumption is that it would be incumbent upon women. And therefore, the Ramah just stated this as a chumrah biyama, as a stringency. But of course, if there are no men around to make Havdalah, the Ramah himself would agree that a woman should make Havdalah. What's his proof? So he brings a proof from a halacha in Siman Reish Ayin Aleph, where the Ramah says that if people were in the middle of a suda, they should stop the meal in order to make Havdalah, and if Havdalah was not a Torah obligation, he wouldn't have required people to stop what they were doing in order to make Havdalah, brings a proof that this is the Ramah's position, and therefore he says that when push comes to shove, we would work with the assumption, even according to the Ramah, that it is a Torah obligation. You look at the Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah also says, number one, a woman should listen to Havdalah from her husband. Number two, if the husband already fulfilled his obligation of Havdalah, then he cannot exempt his wife. And number three, if the wife is stuck and she can't hear Havdalah from any man, not her husband or anybody else, so then when push comes to shove, the woman would be allowed to make Havdalah. However, comes along the Bach. And the Bach actually, in this case, even though the Bach is a commentary on the Torah, which preceded the Shulchan Aruch, in this case, the Bach, in his commentary, actually speaks about the ruling of the Ramah. And the Bach says, I don't understand where the Ramah is getting his idea from. The Ramah is bringing this, basing himself on this opinion of the Orchos Chaim, who said that women are not obligated in Havdalah. She says, so just because women are not obligated in Havdalah, that means that the Ramah should hold that if you just look at the simple meaning and the simple translation of the Ramah, it sounds like the Ramah is saying that therefore women should not make Havdalah themselves, rather they should only hear Havdalah from a man. So the Bach says, let's say that we would treat this like a classical mitzvah essay shehazman grama, classical time-bound positive commandment. We're Ashkenazim. We hold that, number one, women can volunteer to perform mitzvah essay shehazman grama, time-bound positive commandments. They can volunteer to shake a lulav, to sit in the sukkah, to hear a shofar, and not only that, they can even make a bracha on it. So why couldn't she make Havdalah? She could make Havdalah. She could make the bracha of Havdalah. We paskin, like in Siman Tovkuf Peites, like the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, that according to the Ashkenazim, a woman is allowed to volunteer a mitzvah even though she's exempt from the mitzvah. So what's the big deal? So the Bach says, Shari Le Male. He lost it. The Ramah lost it for a moment, and therefore I have to, the Bach is my ancestor, it's okay, he can speak strongly. Okay, so the Ramah, therefore, he had to set the record straight. So the question is, so is there any basis to say that just because women are exempt, therefore they are not allowed to make Havdalah? So there are two different approaches in the commentators to the Shulchan Aruch to say, maybe in this case that would be true. One approach is the approach of the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham says, maybe when we say a woman can volunteer a mitzvah she's exempt from, that's only if the mitzvah involves an action. Like there's a blowing of a shofar, there's a sitting in a sukkah, there's a shaking of a lulav. But if the brach, if the mitzvah itself is just the actual recitation of the brach, it's not that you recite the brach and then you perform the mitzvah. I mean, it can even be a mitzvah that's performed orally, like reciting challah, but at least it's preceded by a bracha. If the entirety of the mitzvah is just the recitation of the bracha, so then the Magen Avraham says, maybe that doesn't work. Maybe that can't be volunteered. So therefore, the Magen Avraham suggests, perhaps that is the reasoning of the Ramah, but says the Magen Avraham, by the way, I side with the Bach. I side with the Bach on this particular dispute. So even if that is what the Ramah intended, nonetheless, when push comes to shove, a woman would be allowed to recite Havdalah herself. The Taz gives a different explanation. The explanation given by the Taz is that he says, well, normally a woman would be able to volunteer a time-bound positive commandment that she's not obligated in, but that's only if it's a Torah obligation. If it's a rabbinic obligation, so then says the Taz, we have a double whammy. Number one, it's only a rabbinic obligation, and number two, it's shehazman grama, it's time-bound. And in such a case, once women are off the hook, they wouldn't be allowed to volunteer. So everybody jumps on the Taz, including the Prima Gadim and others, and say the Aruch HaShulchan. They say that doesn't seem to be supported by the weight of the evidence because, for example, shaking the lulav on every single day of Sukkot, other than the first day of Sukkot, is only rabbinic. outside of the Beis HaMikdash, and yet women are allowed to shake the lulav and make brachos, and we do it all the time. So therefore he says that we don't really seem to follow that approach of the Taz. Even with respect to the Magen Avraham's suggestion that the effort, the entire mitzvah is a bracha, that's the entire mitzvah fulfillment, is the recitation of the bracha, so then it can't be volunteered by a woman if in the event that she is exempt. So the Aruch HaShulchan asks, but there is some sort of a maaseh over here. There's some sort of fulfillment. There's the drinking of the wine. So others say, no, the drinking of the wine is ancillary. That's just once you fulfill the mitzvah of Havdalah, you should accompany it with a blessing on the wine. That doesn't really count necessarily. But Rav Moshe Feinstein says something else. There's a very nice book. It's called The Radiance of Shabbos. It was written by Rabbi Simcha Bunim Kohn. And it includes in it a number of essays by Rav Moshe Feinstein that don't all, some of them do, but they don't all appear in his published tshuvos. Very, very worthwhile. He has like maybe 8 or 9 essays at the end of the book. He has a number of different comments. One of the comments that Rav Moshe Feinstein makes is that normally the issue for those who say that, who disagree with Rabbeinu Tam and say a woman can't make a bracha on a mitzvah that she's exempt from, we don't hold that way, but what's the whole issue? The issue is, what's the normal nusach? What's the normal formulation of the bracha? You say, Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu. You have commanded me to perform this mitzvah, but she hasn't been commanded. So that's the issue. When it comes to Havdalah, there's no bracha, Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu. So he says that for sure over here, there shouldn't be a problem. So the Magen Avraham's approach is very creative and it's very interesting, but fundamentally, even the Magen Avraham rejects it because he says that he holds like the Bach himself, so we're not really so worried about that approach. So this then becomes a major question. To what degree is the ruling of the Ramah simply a chumrah, and to what degree is there flexibility for a woman to make Havdalah on her own if there's no man? If we say especially that there is a strong possibility that a woman is obligated, and then even the Ramah holds that Havdalah is really midaraisa, and it's just a stringency that we say, ideally, a woman should hear from a man. So the poskim point out that fundamentally, we assume that a woman probably is obligating Havdalah. Havdalah is probably a mitzvah de'araisa, and therefore, a woman should not avoid making Havdalah. And if there is no man around to make Havdalah, she really should make Havdalah herself. It gets a little tricky, though, that if we are a little bit worried that maybe the man has more of an obligation than the woman. So what, in fact, happens when a man has already fulfilled his obligation by listening to Havdalah in Shul? So some commentators say it's really not a big deal. The Birkei Yosef, the Chidah, says, since fundamentally we hold that Havdalah is deraisa, a mitzvah min haTorah, both for men and for women, even if the husband has already fulfilled his obligation, he can still make Havdalah for his wife. But most commentators, including the Mishnah Berurah, are not comfortable with that. So if that's the case, don't we always have that problem? Don't we always have that problem? Because the husband goes to Shul, and even if he has in mind not to fulfill the mitzvah of Havdalah, when the person makes Havdalah at the end of Maariv, he says that Tachon and Tanu, that the Araisa fulfillment of Havdalah takes place when the man recites the blessing of Atachon Antanu in the Shmona Esrei on Motzei Shabbos. So then his obligation to make Havdalah on the cup of wine is already only a rabbinic extension of his obligation. He's fulfilled his Torah obligation already. He only has the rabbinic obligation. So, and while his wife has potentially a Torah obligation, and then how can he enable her to fulfill her Torah obligation if he only has a rabbinic obligation at that point in time? So you could say, okay, well, that's not a problem because Yatza Motzi, even though he already fulfilled his obligation, he nonetheless has the ability to exempt somebody else. So number one, there's a question raised by the Noda Yehuda that maybe that whole idea of Yatza Motzi doesn't apply to women. Okay, we're probably not so worried about that. But number two, maybe we have to worry about that the wife isn't really obligated altogether. And therefore, if the husband is only saying this on a derabbanan level, so maybe there is sort of this tension that she is not really obligated altogether. And if she's obligated on a deraisa level, so maybe there is this problem that he doesn't have the ability to do yatzah motzi. So what's recommended is that the wife should say, Baruch Hamavdil ben Kodesh Lechol, that she should at least knock down her obligation to be on the same level as the husband's obligation. However, the bigger problem would be if the husband had fulfilled his obligation entirely of both hearing the Havdalah, both saying the Atachon Antanu and making the Havdalah al Hakos. In such a case, if he fulfilled both, so then there would be a question as to whether he should really help her fulfill the obligation, given that there is a possibility that she doesn't have the obligation. Yes?
What would happen if the woman also said Shmona Esrei? Would it change the status of the Havdalah?
If the woman also said Shmona Esrei, then they would also be on the same level. Yes, the general practice is women don't make Shmona Esrei on Motzi Shabbos, but if she did, so then she would once again be restored to the same level. Now, what about saying Havdalah over the telephone? So Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva in Chelek Dalet of Orach Chaim, in which he says that you could fulfill Havdalah over the telephone. And this is one, and therefore, if a woman is sick and she's in the hospital and she can't make her own Havdalah, then she can have a son, a husband, whoever it is who's calling up to recite the Havdalah on her behalf. But Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and many others disagree, and they say that the voice that comes out on the telephone does not really count as the actual voice, and therefore it is better in such a case for the woman to make Havdalah herself. But Moshe Feinstein also holds fundamentally a woman can make Havdalah herself. He didn't spell it out, but he probably was talking about a situation where the woman was not capable of making Havdalah on her own in that situation. But there's a separate problem, which is if a woman makes her own Havdalah, who drinks the wine? After all, don't we all know that if a woman drinks from the Havdalah wine, she's going to grow a beard? So there is such an old wives' tale that if a woman drinks from the Havdalah wine, she's going to grow a beard. I'm not going to call it an old Rebbetzin's tale because I think the Rebbetzins probably know better. So the truth of the matter is that there is no good source for this notion that if a woman drinks the Havdalah wine, she's going to grow a beard. There are some commentators who have written on this topic. There's a nice article in the Chakira magazine by Rabbi Ari Zivotofsky. I just saw him over Shabbos, where he quotes a Sefer Matamim, which is a late 19th century work. The Sefer Matamim says something along these lines, that Megadlei Zakan should make Havdalah. Those people who have beards should make Havdalah. That's just another way of referring to men. The Lechatchila men should make Havdalah. So the Chazon Ish once pointed out this. I found this in the Sefer Maisa Ish, Volume 5 of the Chazon Ish, that Sipra Rav Rabbeinu Yisrael Yosef Shapiro, Rabbi Yisrael Shapiro said he was once next to the Chazon Ish when Shabbos was ending and he was making Havdalah, and the Chazon Ish's practice is that he would dispense the Havdalah to young boys and young girls and he would give them to drink. And there was one little girl who wanted to drink, he would generally give to the boys, but there was one little girl who wanted to drink from the wine. And her father said, in Tishti Yigdalach Zakat, if you're going to drink from the wine, you're going to grow a beard. And she said, I don't care, I'm going to grow a beard. No, it doesn't say that. And HaChazon Ish, Shamis Adrarim, Chayech, and when the Chazon Ish heard this, the Chazon Ish laughed, and he said, L'olam Yesh Tos. He says, Lo Misha Shosa Godelo Zakan. It's not that if you drink, you're going to grow a beard. Lo Misha Godelo Zakan. Who shall say? It's that if you have a beard, so then you drink from the wine. But it doesn't mean that immense means that only men generally would drink from the wine. But there was such a practice that only men drink from the Havdalah wine. It's nothing to do with growing beards, but there is some other source. What's the source? So the Magen Avraham says, he quotes this idea, says it's a shalah. I'm not going to tell you what the shalah says, because it's al pi kabbalah. You go to the shalah if you want to read the shalah and you figure out what he says. So you got to look in the shalah. So what does the shalah say? The shalah says, well, the Gemara tells us, the Medrash tells us, Gemara Sanhedrin Daf Ayin, that according to one opinion, Rabbi Meir, the fruit of the Eitz Hadas that caused the sin, the original sin, Chava took from the Eitz Hadas, ate it, gave to Adam. So according to one opinion, it was a grapevine. And says the Shalom, how did that work? She took the grapes and she squeezed it. She made grape juice and she gave it to her husband. And the idea was that this was intended to cause a separation between herself and her husband. A little cryptic. How is it intended to create a separation between herself and her husband? So it could be that maybe this resulted, as a result of the sin, she received dam nidos. That's what caused women to become nidos, and that causes a separation between a wife and a husband. Could be she wanted him to die. Different interpretations of exactly how it was intended to create a separation between the wife and the husband. But because that was the goal of what she wanted to accomplish, so therefore when it comes to this idea of separation between Shabbos and the rest of the weekend, it was only the sin of the Eitz Hadas that caused Shabbos to have to end altogether, that it wouldn't be Yom Shekudo Shabbos. So on that basis, that's why women don't drink the Havdalah wine. That is the idea that is raised by the Shalosh. So comes along Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank in his Tshuvas Har Tzvi, Or HaChaim Simen Kuf Nidal. He says, if you don't like that reason, because it's not sufficiently rationalistic for you, I will come up with one, which is Al Pi Nigla. One that just is based on the halacha. What did we say? We said that according to the halacha, there is a possibility, according to the Or HaChaim, that women are not obligated in Havdalah altogether. If women are not obligated in Havdalah altogether, so they hear the bracha of Berei Pri Hagafen, and then they hear this long bracha of Havdalah, etc., etc., and they answer amen to that bracha, and that ends up being a hefsek. It ends up being an interruption, since they're not obligated in the mitzvah, so therefore they're listening to that bracha and answering amen to that bracha constitutes an interruption between the amen that they said on the Berei Pri Hagafen and their ability to drink the wine. So according to that, they can really make another Berei Pri Hagafen afterwards and drink the wine. You can say, no, maybe it's a bracha levatala. Maybe they were Yotzei the first time on the Berei Pri Hagafen. So therefore, they're kind of stuck. And therefore, on that basis, he says that they should not drink the Havdalah wine. Now, there are those who argue that say that if you hear a bracha, because you might be obligated, like the Shechianu on the second night of Rosh Hashanah, for example, we don't generally assume that it's a separation. We make a birchas besamim when Yom Kippur falls out on Shabbos, even though there are opinions that say that there's no neshama yaseva and you shouldn't make a brei minei besamim in the middle of Havdalah. And we say, what's so bad? It's a birchas nenin anyway. But maybe it's an interruption in terms of what you're really required to do during the Havdalah, but we do it anyway. So therefore, it would seem that we're not really so incredibly worried about this. Yes? Yeah, but there you definitely are obligated. In other words, that's part of the framework of brachos that you're obligated to recite. No, but we say she's allowed to take that upon herself. But if you assume that she's not allowed to take upon herself Havdalah, if you assume like that opinion, right, that it's actually forbidden for her to take it upon herself, so then it would end up that she would not be allowed to make the bracha. She wouldn't be allowed to make the bracha, so then it would end up being an interruption. Remember, we brought two opinions, the Magen Avraham and the Taz, that both said that there might be that possible halacha in this particular case. Okay, now even if you don't accept the explanation that is given by Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, but the reality is that the Shlah is still there. So the Magen Avraham does quote this idea of a woman not drinking from the Havdalah wine, and therefore this is another reason why ideally a woman listens to Havdalah said by man, but we said that if there is no man, and then a woman certainly can make Havdalah herself, does she make an under over wine in such a situation? So I saw brought in the name of Yaakov Kamenetsky, and I saw this brought down by others as well. No problem. If a woman makes Havdalah herself, she can make it on beer. Let her make Havdalah on beer. Because after all, you're allowed to make Havdalah on Chomer Medina, on what's considered to be the drink of the land. The Chatzchila, you should really make it on wine, unless you don't have wine available or you happen to prefer the beer. But here there's another good reason why a woman should prefer the beer, not because she'll grow a beard, but because there is this Kabbalistic notion, at least, of a woman not drinking from the Havdalah wine. So therefore he says, no problem, you should make it on beer. Okay, now, others say that that once you do have a woman making Havdalah because there's no man around, so says the Aruch HaShulchan, we're not going to suspend the Ikar HaDin, the main halacha that a person who makes Havdalah is supposed to drink from the wine, based on a minhaga bi'alma, based on something which he says, it's really just a custom, it's a stringency, nothing you really have to worry about. Rav Shmuel Vozner in the Shevet Alevi similarly says it's only hakpado bi'alma. Yeah, just something that people are careful about or worried about, but you don't really have to be so tremendously worried about it. The lashon of the Arach HaShulchan is worth repeating. He says, "Utmeheni alze ta'atu dinu." It's not a real din. Minhaga biyamu ve'lo mekulan choshishos leze. And not all the women are worried about drinking the wine. He says, "Oops." And therefore, he says that it's a pashut that kishim avdilos, that when a woman does make avdala tzrichos lishtos, of course she should drink. And he doesn't say it has to be beer. She's even allowed to drink wine. I saw it in Yisrael David Harfinis in the Nishma Shabbos. So he says that even the Shalah was only talking about when a woman drinks wine after a man makes the Havdalah. But if the woman herself makes the Havdalah, he says, Shomer mitzvah lo yeda davara. She's doing the mitzvah, no bad is going to come from doing a mitzvah. So of course in such a case, she doesn't need to worry. She should be happy, drink the wine. If she prefers the beer, drink the beer. But even if she wants to drink the wine, no problem with respect to drinking the wine. In fact, if you look in the Rishonim, there's a Sefer Leke Yosher that quotes the practices of the Trumas Hadeshen, one of the late Rishonim, Rishon Isseline, and he says that there was the practice of the Trumas Hadeshen that every single time after he made Havdalah, he would give the Koshel Havdalah, he would give the cup of Havdalah to his wine to drink. This is the idea that, like, even Kiddush is considered, whenever you have a kosher bracha, supposed to be meshager liishto. There's an idea of a husband giving a kosher bracha. This is how marriage begins, right? Okay, under the chuppah, you have the wine. This verse is drunk by the husband, it's drunk by the wife. That's the idea that it should be passed on to the wife. And some say if it really is a separately designated kosher bracha, that it is a cup that was set aside for a different bracha other than Havdalah, as is in the practice in many places, like in shuls, where they, in Shalosh Shudas, there's a Kiddush cup, and then they use that wine, they use that cup for the Havdalah, because it's not drunk at Shalosh Shudas, it's too late, so they use it for the Havdalah. So the Tzos HaShulchan says that, of Chaim Na, says in such a case, of course a woman can drink from it, because then it's not just considered to be a kosher of Havdalah, it's considered to be a classical kosher bracha. So in such a case, for sure, a woman would be allowed to drink from it. So there are all kinds of leniencies. One doesn't have to go crazy about this particular stringency. Obviously, when the lenient situations are not applicable, so then one is stringent, but otherwise there certainly is room to be makel. In fact, the Shevet HaLevi says, what about your Yom Kippur situation? The husband is off in shul, and he stays after Ne'ilah, he stays for Marv, and then everybody is so caught up with a spiritual fervor, they dance for an hour afterwards. So how much does a wife really have to wait for her husband to come home and make Havdalah when she's starving after Yom Kippur? So he says that just like if a woman is alone, she should make her own Havdalah. If she's really going to wait a long time for the husband to come home and she needs to break her fast, that also would warrant her making her own Havdalah. She can make Havdalah, she could drink the wine, don't worry about it. When push comes to shove, we can certainly be makel on this issue. Rashama Zalman Orbach points out that when Havdalah is subsumed within Kiddush, for sure there's no stringency. If you're making a Kiddush and on Motzei Shabbos it's Yantiv, you have Yaknahas, you make Kiddush, make Havdalah, there's the candles, you make the Kedusha Sayom, you have all kinds of different brachos, so then it really is considered to be wine of Kiddush and not wine of Havdalah. Women could say it for sure, and a woman can drink from the wine for sure. Is there any preference during the 9 days? We're about to enter the 9 days. It should be a happy time. Mashiach should come. But the 9 days have to be observed and we're not able to eat meat or drink wine. What about Havdalah during the 9 days? So the poskim say that ideally what you should do during Havdalah is that you make Havdalah on wine. If a person doesn't prefer beer, so it really should be on wine. And then instead of the adult who's not supposed to drink wine during the 9 days, drinking it, really it's Yayin Shel Mitzvah, and you really could drink it if you needed to, but the practice is to give it to a katan, to give it to a minor. It's kind of hard to figure out the right classification. Old enough for chinuch, not old enough to understand how to mourn for the Beis HaMikdash. Difficult to classify. You find the minor who fits, you know, the 1 day or 1 hour that he fits into that category, and you give him the wine to drink. So is there any preference to give to a katan as opposed to a katana? So you should say, oh, because of this minhag, you should give only to a katana. There are those who say, I actually saw you this from Saraya Dublinsky that he says as well that when a woman makes a dal, if there is a katan around, so she should really give the wine to the katan to drink. So do we say that you can give to a katana as easily as you can give to a katan? I saw in Yushalayim Mo'adeh, the Sefer by Rav Nevinsel, Rav Avigdor Nevinsel, he actually brings this question. I thought he was going to be machmir. He ended up being mekel. He says, yeah, just like you can give it to a katan, you can give it to a katana. I've heard brought, I couldn't find it in Rav Harfinis's Sefer. I heard brought in the name of Rav Harfinis that he also rules the same way, because he says that even if you're going to be stringent based on the Shalah only applies to women who are older already and subject to Damnidos, or who are able to be married, like Chava was married. So he brings away, and also Ketanos are not subject to Chumras, and that's certainly not subject to things which are al-pisod, to things that are only Kabbalistic in nature. So it seems that there is room to be makel to give to a katana. So let's go back to our shaila then, okay? The shaila of the Hillel Rabbi, of do you have the men and the women making Havdalah together in order to reinforce everybody's participation and involvement. So I said, look, me'ikar adin, according to the strict letter of the law, it seems that we generally assume that the halacha is like the Rov HaRishonim, Rov HaPoskim, that Havdalah is number one deraisa, and that Havdalah, therefore, is as binding upon women as it is upon men, and that women really could, when push comes to shove, they can even drink from the wine of the Havdalah if they need to. At the same time, the Ramah is the Ramah, and you have to take the default ruling seriously, that when all else is equal, and a woman could hear from a man, that's in the Mishnah Berurah Paskins, in such a case, she should hear from a man. So you have men around, so it is appropriate. Yes, it's true, if you look at the Bach, so the Bach says that the truth of the matter is that since women could volunteer the mitzvah themselves, they could even make Havdalah if there are men who would potentially be able to make it for them. That doesn't appear to be the normative practice. And even the Bach wasn't talking about a situation where the men and the women are all standing around together. He's talking about where the woman could find the man to make for her. So you're saying that it wasn't absolutely necessary. You really want to find an opinion who says that, well, it's better if they know how to make Havdalah themselves. They should do it themselves. So the Ben Ishchai says that, but not for reasons that would go over well on any college campus. He says, yeah, because you can't necessarily trust the women to pay such close attention to the bracha. So therefore, you know, if they can do it themselves, better they should do it themselves. I don't think that's the message that we want to send either. So therefore, I said that it's important to send the message that we have to differentiate. We talk about Havdalah. Part of Havdalah is differentiating between that which is the Chatchila and that which is B'diyebid, of not breaking down barriers beyond that which was enacted by Chazal, while at the same time making sure that they're not artificially extended too far. This also is the mitzvah of Havdalah. I'll just conclude by noting the passage in the Gemara Pesachim and Daf Kuf Yud Gimel, speaking again about recollections of my father and what was important in terms of the home that was established by my father, Zichron Levaka. The Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan Shloshim Minokale Olam Haba. There are three individuals, or there are three practices exercised by individuals that cause one to inherit Olam Haba, to have a very fine, respectable place in Olam Haba. Hadar be'eretz Yisrael, those who live in the land of Israel. V'hamagadol banav l'tamei Torah, and those who raise their children in the ways of a Tamei Torah, in the way of Torah learning and Torah living. V'hamadil al hayayin m'motzei Shabbosos, and those who make Havdalah on wine on Motzei Shabbos. These were all values that were cherished and were observed by my father, Tzvi ben Ephraim HaKohen, Zichrono Levracha, and may we all merit to follow in his example and be successful at fulfilling the mandate, Lahavdil ben HaKodesh ben HaKol, to preserve and uphold the Kedusha of Torah Mitzvos. Thank you very much.
You find a comment about this.